When I was first starting out as a freelancer, I started assisting this woman who was represented by an agent. She told her agency that they should represent me as a junior artist. And if I had to guess, that would have been, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s. So yeah, I was taken onto their roster as a junior artist. And what that means is your rates are lower. You tend to do jobs that are super budgeted and you're working on your portfolio. So doing creatives, which means concepts that you're not getting paid for, but that everybody works collaboratively, adding to their portfolios. We still do creatives. Not only are they fun, but it's a strategic way to have a creative outlet, showcasing your work without a client hovering over you, watering down the creative process. Anyway, so I'm plugging away as a junior artist, and around that time, I also became a single mother. Well, the owner of the agency had been on maternity leave when the agency signed me on, and when she came back from maternity leave, my mentor tells me that I really need to book a meeting with the owner to get some direction on my career. Now, I think this woman had been back for about a month, and I had met her a couple times in the agency, and I remember shortly before our meeting, I was in the agency to pick up a check, and I saw her, and I don't remember exactly what I said. Something in relation to I need to make more money because I'm a single mom with two kids. Obviously, I don't remember verbatim. And she shoots me this look with like daggers in her eyes and bile spewing out of her mouth. I am so sick and tired of hearing about you being a single mom with two kids that you have to feed. Well, I was a bit taken aback. If you remember watching those Flintstone episodes when Fred would like shrink down to the floor, that's exactly how I felt in that moment. On one hand, if I was a broken record about being a single mom with two kids to feed, well, that's just a fact. And my ex did not contribute anything financially. And when you're freelance, money only comes in when you're out there working. Maybe as somebody that was supposed to be managing my career and clearly older than I am, maybe she could have chosen kindness and just maybe explained some things to me. Anyway, shared that interaction with my mentor who said like maybe she was having a bad moment and that I should still forge ahead in asking for a sit-down meeting and that she will go through my portfolio and goals and help direct me with a career plan. So yeah, I asked for a meeting and this woman said, great idea. We will have a meeting. I remember walking into the agency and she was sitting there with stacks of my files and portfolios with this incredibly angry look on her face and says, do not sit down. Here is your work. There is a door. Get the fuck out of my agency. I remember attempting to protest and saying like how I wanted to be represented. And could we not talk about it? And she just repeated herself, pointing to the door. I remember walking along Bloor Street, turning down Bay, all of my portfolios and files with loose images in my arms, crying behind my sunglasses. Like, what the fuck am I to do? I'm a single mom in a freelance world. I remember suddenly becoming face to face with a payphone. Outside of Bay Bloor Radio. For those familiar with Toronto, you would know exactly where that is. Anyway, I stepped into that phone booth, pulled out my paper day timer because that was that long ago, and I just started going through old bookings where I had been an assistant or I did my own jobs, just calling people and saying, hi, it's Andrea Claire here. I just wanted to let you know that I'm freelance now. I left the agency and here's my pager number. Yeah, we had pagers back then. I also remember booking jobs at that moment from the payphone. Photographer Nigel Dixon was my first freelance job booked from that payphone. Fast forward to years later, I'm represented by a different agency and I'm booking a multiple page spread editorial with a magazine. And the editor calls me, hey, Andrea, what's the story between you and so-and-so? Let's call her Lady X. Now I honestly have no idea. And it can't be because she hates single moms, because my understanding was that she was a single mom at the time. And there's no way it could be because I was young and naive looking for her guidance when she represented me, because that would just be completely unreasonable. Or maybe she's the reason why we have that hashtag women supporting women. Maybe that was invented working from a reverse psychology perspective. Anyway, I told the editor, there's no issue. I don't know what you're talking about. Because in my mind, even to this day, I got nothing. I also thought, how can this person hold some anger towards me with no basis? Like I literally did nothing nor say anything whatsoever against her. Her behavior has always shocked me from the very brief time that I had an interaction with her. Anyway, the editor comes back to me and says that Lady X was producing the job and had said, under no circumstances will she ever work with Andrea Claire. That's me. And basically told the editor that it was her or me. Now the editor told her, I am so sorry that you feel that way and I respect it. And if you can't work with Andrea, then I'll get another producer. Lady X decided to do the job. I went into that shoot thinking, you know what? I'm going to be super cordial and do a great job and treat Lady X as I would treat anyone else and just let bygones be bygones. After all, Good people make bad choices. Shout out to my friend Megan, who is a school teacher and a mother who I learned this phrase from. Thanks, Meg. Anyway, the shoot was stunning. Zero issues. Since then, over the years, I've had people say to me, I was talking to Lady X and gosh, she really doesn't like you. And I just think that's so fucked up. And also kind of funny because I literally did nothing. She can't really speak much about me and I can't really speak much about her. Anyway, so fast forward, I'm living in Singapore and this hairstylist that I know who worked under me for my team for Fashion Week years ago was in Singapore to launch a Canadian hair care brand there. We meet for dinner and we're just talking about the old days back in Canada, reminiscing on projects. I ask her if she's still represented and she says, yes, Lady X. And I just laughed and I said, she hates me. Hairstylist asked me why. And I said, I literally have no clue. And she assures me that it can't possibly be the case anymore. There's no way. Offers that she had a call with her later on and was going to ask her. And I told her that I didn't care. Well, I see this hairstylist the next day at her event and she comes up to me laughing and says, oh, she really hates you, but also wouldn't tell me why. Now, I know a lot of you listening to this, you don't know me, and I can tell you I wear my heart on my sleeve. I overshare, clearly. Let's talk about, you know, hydrogen peroxide in my vagina. Anyway, I just think whatever is going on in this head of hers, Lady X, it must literally be all in her head. Oh. I forgot to mention that when she kicked me out of the agency, she was telling people that I was no longer working in the industry because I found being a single mother working in freelance way too stressful and I couldn't hack it. When they found me and discovered that wasn't true, many people were just telling me what she was saying. Honestly, she would have been better just to do what hair salons do when stylists leave a salon. I don't know where she is working right now, you know, and leave it at that. Oh, okay, so fast forward, I'm at my daughter's high school attending a university fair. This is fairly recently, and I feel someone staring at me. You know, you can just feel the weight of someone's gaze. I look around and literally standing in the middle of the gym is this older woman shooting daggers at me from her eyes. And I honestly did not recognize her. And I'm definitely not trying to be a bitch. Honest to God, I thought, why is someone's grandmother like having in for me? Like, why are they giving me these dirty looks? Anyway, the next week or so, I was volunteering during the school's parent-teacher meetings, and the musical theater program had a fundraising booth set up. I'm standing there, and I'm talking to a bunch of parents and some of the kids, and I see this grandma walk by. Honestly, it was like a scene from a Hollywood movie, because I swear everything around us started to slow down and get blurry as she's walking by me with this weird smirk on her face and that dagger look in her eyes. And I'm like, who is this lady? Yeah, it was her. I didn't realize it until she passed through the vestibule. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, it's Lady X. And I laughed thinking like, why the fuck am I holding so much space in your head for no fucking reason? Now I've become friends with some of the parents at the school, as you do. And one of the parents is having ladies' night at her place. There are some new faces there. And I'm telling the story of Lady X. And one woman says, oh, that Lady X is actually a very good friend of mine. And she would never behave this way. And I said to her, well, I don't know how to break it to you, but your friend absolutely behaves this way. I might have used the C word. I've told this story so many times over the years, and I've gone through so many different emotions about it. Like, obviously, at first, I was really upset because somebody that has that kind of power to halt your income and try to blackball you in an industry that you're only getting your foot in the door. It's okay. Like, we don't have to like each other in this world, of course, but to go so far as to try to sabotage someone's livelihood, like, that's just fucking evil. I don't really think about this person ever until someone else brings them up to me. And I guess it's just because, you know, recently with my daughter's high school events and stuff, like that's why it's fresh in my mind. And I really wanted to share this story. I feel like she thinks about me probably way too often. I really hope that she finds peace. And I feel like there's so many messages in the story, both for the younger generations and the older generations. I think ultimately any power you hold, use it for good and not for evil. It's kind of easy in life to just choose not to be a bitch. Welcome to the Fuck You 50s, the podcast for women who refuse to tolerate the bullshit anymore. This is real talk, real stories, and a long overdue reality check. I'm your host, Andrea Clare, and this podcast is the filter-free voice you've been waiting for with a dose of F-bombs. The Fuck You 50s, unfiltered, unapologetic, and undeniably needed. My guest today is Melanie Chong. She is an MIT Sloan graduate, cosmetic chemist and design consultant with a global network and clientele in the beauty, wellness, and cosmetics industry. She is also a consultant and coach on branding and formulation design for several global brands. She's here to tell us her journey from modeling to neurocosmetics. Cognitive beauty, what is it?
Okay, so yes, this is so much fun. I'm glad that we're doing this. And, you know, I love what you stand for and all the things that you post, and it's good vibes.
Thank you. So I guess I just want to jump into kind of like your background, just so everybody knows, like, you and I worked together like years ago on so many different shoots because you were modeling, and you still are doing some modeling, right? But that is not your focus anymore. You know, our industry has been known to be ageist, unfortunately, but there, you're seeing a bit of kind of like, I don't want to say turnaround, that's not the right phrase, but like opening up. And
I like the word mature. I like mature.
Mature is good. Yeah. And I, for me personally, as a woman who's 54 years old, like if I see brands that are targeted to our age category, but they're using models that are under 30 or even under 40, like I it's a turnoff for me because I just think I can't relate to anything in that picture, you know? And I really wish that brands would really understand that, you know? So anyway, so why don't you talk about that, kind of your segue, like how did you go from working in modeling to where you're at now?
So it's a funny story and really unexpected for me, because it happened when I got pregnant with Dre, and I just looked at, you know, my family history, and I thought, man, I'm never going to be able to model again. Once I have a baby, I'm going to be big, and that's not the archetype that was popular then. Things have changed now. And I thought, you know what, I'm really going to have to, you know, rely on, you know, plan B and have a backup plan. And so I thought about what I was passionate about and what I was interested in and what I liked and I could, you know, do effectively. And I wanted to start a skincare line. And I thought, oh my God, I know all these people. I work in the beauty business and it's going to be so much fun and so easy. And it's not. It was really hard. I was taken advantage of, you know, in that sort of the engineering side of the industry. And it forced me to learn really quickly and do it for myself. I just went that way and it just kept growing. And I just kept really honing my skill. And I realized that not only did I really like it, but other people thought I was pretty good at it.
Yeah. So far, so good. And so you graduated from MIT Sloan, right? And so when was that in this kind of journey? And what did you graduate with?
So it was kind of a long journey, because when I was modeling, my mother forced me to still stay in school. And back in the day, it was called distance learning. And then I never thought that I would need to use it. And then someone challenged me, you know, Melanie, why don't you just go back to school? You can do it and get your chemistry degree. So I did that. I was also approached by someone else when I was traveling and said, listen, you don't need to have a master's or a PhD, but there are places that want to offer you, a higher education, because I think they thought that I was a good representative for MIT. So I don't know. They let me into a program, and I had some really great experiences. And again, it was just like that imposter syndrome that hit me. And I, you know, had great feedback and a great cohort when I was there, like doctors and PhDs from all over the world. So it was a specialized program where you basically do a master's in your field specific to you. So I felt really privileged to be a part of those groups and be in the room at MIT. And it was all based on critical thinking and innovation design. And it was really eye-opening. And I'm really proud that I'm able to inject that knowledge and that experience into my work now. I feel like it it's all an experience that I get to bring back into the room with my clients.
I feel like there's a lot of, and I don't know if men have this conversation, but so many women talk about this imposter syndrome, right? I think we all kind of go through it. Mm-hmm. I guess you almost have this like self-doubt of like, do I really deserve that seat at that table? And of course we do, right? And it's just like incredible, like the breadth of work that you have done. I guess to start with like cognitive beauty, what is it? What's cognitive beauty?
Cognitive beauty is a fairly new intersection that's uptrending in the beauty industry. And it's basically the intersection of beauty and psychology and neuroscience. And it's all encompassing in, the future of wellness, really. What I've been doing is highlighting the skin-brain axis, which is basically our skin's translation to the brain of what we're experiencing externally. So whether it be touch, temperature, or emotions, which affect our neurosystem and even our musculature. So it's very broad, it's very complex, but what it comes down to really is that everything that we feel and we experience, whether you know it or allow it, it's always going to be reflected in your face and in your skin. So imagine you're driving by a bus stop and you see something or someone that is familiar to you. You don't know it, but your face has made some sort of adjustment and your brain has said something and it's been highlighted. So whether or not you use that information that your skin and brain have processed, it's imprinted into who you are. And so you might get a little twinkle in your eye, or you might get a little
anger.
Yeah, you could have that. And so it's really, like I said, it's kind of hard to put it in an eggshell. I'd love to create a better, more succinct and accurate articulation of that.
Well, and I wonder too, because you have such that strong science background, so to kind of translate it to like layperson terms, maybe just more conversations with like people like me, you know, maybe we're able to pull some of those kind of thought process out. Like, so one of the things that I like kind of think about with your explanation there is like, so you talk about like facial anatomy and neurobiology, and you mentioned that the face being the most expressive and communicative part of our body. And traditionally, yes, but I mean, now that we see a lot of people that are getting fillers and Botox, does that influence that? And does it affect those kind of patterns?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting question. Oftentimes, the manifestation of our emotions and our external experiences, they end up in our faces, in creases, in laugh lines, in frown lines. So if we're practicing these type of emotions and they're leaving their lasting impression on our skin, sometimes people want to change that because they want to fit a standard that's influenced by media and the things around us. And so if you do Botox, obviously it's a neurotoxin and it's going to freeze your face. It's going to freeze the things that you might not want to do, like frown. And maybe curb the ability to continue to maintain those facial musculature habits. So I don't find that that's a bad thing. If someone's doing it because they want to resculpt the shape of their face, because they want to look new, you have to look deeper at the psychology of that person. And so some people are really great at sculpting their own faces, and some people are very apparently trying to hide something that is, again, affected by your psychology and your neurology, and it's manifesting on their face. So you can't always hide major insecurities or body dysmorphia. There's just something that's apparent when someone is so obsessed with the sculpture of their face that they're trying to hide something. There's a difference between the enhancing and the hiding. I'm not against Botox, but I think that really leaning in on our mental wellness can, you know, bridge the gap between the misunderstanding, right. Even like the self-misunderstanding, and other people misunderstanding why you do that.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I read your book last night, which is fantastic. I only needed to Google a few words. Phew.
Well, I'm working on the subtitles and everything to help people because I've got that feedback. So let's just say this book is in beta and it's probably, I'm hoping, going to be a better asset to people, a better learning tool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's great, but I really love how you broke down because it makes it like so simple for everybody. Like peptides, like they stimulate your collagen production. Retinoids, they promote cell turnover. Hyaluronic acid boosts hydration. And then the neuropeptides modulate skin-brain interaction. And that was like, okay, I don't understand that one. That one I didn't get.
Well, neuropeptides are going to be huge in the industry. And this intersection between psychology and beauty, I believe, is going to be such an amazing gateway for people to understand and grow and how they can manifest their happiness and allow themselves to look better and feel better from the skin to within, so to speak. But you also want to know just kind of about the nature of neuropeptides. So neuropeptides are specifically formulated molecules that will speak to the neurotransmitters within your skin. And this all occurs through something called the endocannabinoid system. And this is where different proteins are signaling within your skin cells, and they are deployed all over your body. So whether you get a tingle in your skin, whether you get an itchy reaction to something, if you enjoy the smell of something, even your endocannabinoid system is triggered. So the neuropeptides are interacting with your skin-brain axis, and what they can influence are the inflammation, your immune responses. They can also help to regulate pain within your skin, itching, and something called vasodilation, which is any redness or sometimes spider veins. So if you have a reaction, and like I said, sometimes these reactions can come from, you know, anxiety, psychological reasons, and they can also be external.
So, I mean, we know like peptoids, retinoids, hyaluronic acid, like we kind of, I think, because there's been so much talk about them in the media and skincare and everything. So we know it, like, it's an ingredient, and I think they're sourced from different places, right? So neuropeptides, so that would also be another ingredient, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And then where would that be sourced? Is that sourced mm-hmm. similarly to peptides, or is it completely different?
Well, so far what I've experienced is that they're finding these peptides within natural sources. So plants, there's a plant that they sourced in India that used to be considered a weed. And now it's a highly coveted source of raw materials for health and wellness products. So oftentimes they'll discover these things from biomass from other products, whether it be seaweed or even from corn or any other, you know, biomass that's created from fruits, vegetables, and natural sources. So they are sourced from natural living products.
Are they then essentially like pharmaceutical grade ingredients, or that kind of all depends on how it's extracted?
Well, the pharmaceutical grading comes much later. So it's basically a category. So it doesn't, just because something is called pharmaceutical grade, it's meant that it's gone through some rigid testing. It doesn't mean that the product has changed from its origin. So you can have a product, an extract that is considered a peptide, and it works just the same way as if someone said pharmaceutical grade. It's the exact same thing. It just means that it's gone through regulatory testing to achieve that label. So pharmaceutical is a labeling as long as that product meets the requirements.
And I guess to kind of go through all that testing, that also probably has a big dollar attachment to it as well, right?
Yeah, it's a very large investment, a huge academic, intellectual, and financial investment to do that. So you would go through that process if you plan on being a global supplier and standing behind your claims.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That explains it very well. Thank you. The other thing that I wanted to talk about too, that you talk about, is the facial massage and lymphatic drainage, which I love. I find it so hard since I've been back in Toronto. And if anybody is from here and they recommend someone, like, please. But I found it really hard to find a facialist that I get the same kind of intense quality of facials like I used to get in Singapore, because there was like very big on like the lymphatic drainage and facial massage. And I know we can do a lot of it ourselves as well, which I haven't mastered. So I don't know if you, first of all, have tips on that. But I feel that, like, I've noticed online when I was kind of doing some research for our conversation, that there are some skeptics about this whole like neuro cosmetic. I think from reading your book and understanding this, that I was probably already experiencing some of that neuro cosmetic, just with the massage, like the facials and stuff I was getting in Singapore, that you definitely see the difference. Like when you're spending that kind of time on your skin, I feel like I look older moving back to Canada than when I was living in Singapore. But aside from facial massage and lymphatic drainage, what's your kind of take on all that? And do you have any good tips on how we can do it ourselves?
So for the people that are skeptics, we need skeptics in our world, because otherwise people wouldn't question things and then run out to try to prove them. But I think that the scientific background is there. The proof is there. There's a lot of studies, and facial and lymphatic drainage, it's not new. It's been around for thousands of years. And even when we talk about the connection between the skin and brain and what they have coined as psychodermatology, that's not new. Hippocrates proved that our emotional reactions manifest themselves in our skin. And so there are a lot of areas in your face that require drainage, and they have blockage because, you know, based on your tension and based on your genetics, we have our very important lymph glands in our neck and all the way into our underarms. So I feel that lymphatic drainage of the face is really important, because these are some key areas and you can definitely have blockages. So I believe that, you know, all the areas of the face need lymphatic drainage. I would say definitely just find those little trigger points. And I don't believe that facial massage for everyone, it's not a clinical perfect science. It's something that you have to discover within yourself. And it helps to improve the flora of your own microbiome of your skin.
Yeah. And your circulation and everything too, right? I would go frequently to get Gua Sha facials in Singapore. And I've never mastered doing the tool myself, because I find it's almost like a little bit painful. And which is funny that when someone else does it, they don't know what you're feeling, but there's obviously a technique to it, right? And definitely when you talk about like how you know, you can see like anytime if somebody is unwell or they're going through some amount of stress, anxiety, you see that on the skin. For sure. So when I was reading through your beta book, you definitely like a lot of it really resonated. Women are always kind of seeking for that, you know, that beauty grail, you know, and I have people always asking me like, what do I do with my skin? Cause I generally have good skin. I've never had any fillers. I've had a little bit of Botox, but I haven't had Botox in over a year now. So I think it's all gone. But I just take care of my skin, generally speaking, when I'm not falling asleep with my makeup on. I believe you talk about facial yoga a bit as well, right? Like I remember when I was in grade 5, and there was a magazine at our house that, you know, fashion magazine, maybe that's what inspired me to get into this industry. But I remember flipping through it, because what else do you do when you're in grade 5 but read fashion magazines? And there was a 2-page spread on facial yoga. And I remember sitting in front of the mirror with a magazine in front of me going through like this facial yoga. And so facial muscles play a huge role in
let's say, what's a good word? Because I don't like anti-aging. So facial muscles and the role that they play in aging positively resonates with me so much. And I swear that I look younger on the left side of my face. And it's because I can cock this eyebrow, right? And this side, I can't cock an eyebrow. So I feel like it's heavier on this side. So that's why whenever I have my photo taken or if I'm doing stuff on camera, I always try to put my left side to camera. Yeah, exactly. where's my question? It's almost like it's a little bit of an exercise. That's what I was saying. And so the right side, yes, the muscles are not as strong. And you talk about as we age and we lose that natural elasticity of the skin, it's because of the decline in the collagen and elastin, right? Am I saying that correctly? Production. And do you find that because overall in society, I believe that the perspective of what I do for a living, I feel that people are generally taking better care of their skin, protecting it from the elements, and from your science-based perspective, do you feel that the science of aging has generally slowed down? And I'm speaking purely from like an aesthetic perspective.
I would say that based on the body of knowledge that we have about aging now, you know, there's so many labs out there that are obsessed with anti-aging, improving the quality of your skin and the health of your skin. So absolutely, I think that because our world is so complex and somewhat chaotic now, we actually age ourselves more in this day and age. When life was simple and people practiced, acts of happiness and wellness every day, that was their focus. But the world has evolved into a really chaotic, competitive space where we're competing against our own selves sometimes. So that's been inserted. But then there's also where science comes in and says, you know what, we can change this. We know this now. We can avoid the sun. We can avoid UVA, UVB sun damage. We can delay oxidative aging because we know more. So it's kind of like we're creating a problem to solve. But I do think that humans and people being obsessed with aesthetics today have achieved a certain level of personal growth. And I believe that we can nowadays, what I refer to as we can de-age. De-aging is a process with many different disciplines involved. De-stressing, detoxifying, internal health, immune health, all of those things, I think if we practice them and commit to them, we can improve our aging process. I think that's what I try to advocate is for people to have a healthy relationship with their own aging process.
Well, and I think too, kind of, just kind of reflecting on what you're saying and just in general, I think society thinks of aging. I mean, sure, we see some physical, like our joints hurt or, what your body shape changes or whatever. But I think most of us, when we think of aging, we automatically start thinking of aesthetics, right? The outward appearance of that aging. Whereas you're talking about how it's all combined, it's not just outward, it's inward as well. And we have to kind of really take a moment to think about that and just self-reflect on what we can do to be healthier inside and out.
Yeah, I think that, as consumers, but also within this circle, we have some experts here. Like we've worked in beauty and, the media markets for so long, and we've seen how the archetypes for beauty have evolved. And has it become a little bit twisted, based on certain groups of people pushing their own expectations on others? And then the rest of the population seeking to achieve, being something that they're not. So it's really about peeling it back. And I think, with wisdom comes growth. And I think, I really want to have an impact on our industry to, you know, bring beauty intelligence to people so it can, you know, have lasting effects and healthful effects.
If you had to summarize to somebody from your perspective, if, I guess maybe almost like the future of that cognitive beauty.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's going to be a growth journey, and I think it's going to be fun for a lot of people. It's definitely fun for me to comprise all this information and try to allow people to understand where the science is meeting the marketing and where it's meeting the human aspect of things. So it's really, you know, emerging ourselves into the many different disciplines of wellness that are involved and how they do manifest in our skin, whether it be through the texture of your skin or, you know, the happiness or the sadness that you can see in someone's face. And it's a really intricate interplay between the mind and the skin, where your radiance and your individuality and your authenticity start, you know, within your mind, and they make its way through the brain's neural pathways and, you know, manifest on the skin's surface in so many different ways. You know, you can sit in front of a person silent and just stare at their face for 20 minutes. And I'll tell you, there's probably so many stories that you can come away with without ever exchanging a word. And that's just through the magic of your facial expressions. I think it's really fascinating. And I don't want to say that I'm an expert on any of that, but really this is, you know, a communal journey for me to help, you know, build out, our aesthetic, our beauty intelligence for the benefit of holistic wellness.
I love that. So much great information. I think definitely we could aim to do a part two down the line. And once we kind of release this episode, I would love to invite a lot of the listeners to maybe like drop questions, because I'm sure a lot of people will have questions, which then would kind of help kind of form another conversation. And so are you, because again, like looking on your website, like do you work with other brands as well? Or what's kind of your big focus right now?
So I do. I work with a lot of different brands, and I'm kind of a revolving door of different brands coming in and out. So depending on, you know, the stages that they're in, I've developed companies from concept to product launch. I've either created original formulations or improved formulations for them to become more sustainable, more green, or more circular. But I work with lots of different brands on different levels. From having the experience being in the marketing industry and the beauty marketing industry for so long, I can consult on a lot of different levels. So whether it's from the aesthetics of the product and the presentation and the packaging to what's deep inside and, you know, how your ingredients are going to last on the market for a long time. You know, I want to bring brands and beauty brands longevity in the market.
Is there any kind of one ingredient that you think everyone should be looking for right now?
Well, I'm really excited about these neurocosmetics, and I'm definitely going to be talking about more specifically about the origins of them as we're still formulating our own brand strategy here, and the labs are working on stuff nonstop. We're growing, and we just want to be the leader in bringing neurocosmetics and their benefits to an awaiting audience. I think that the development of peptides for the skin have gone in an amazing, crazy direction that we can actually see clinical results. And I know you don't like the word anti-aging, because I don't like it either, but we use the term de-aging. So you can actually improve your skin through topical applications now, and it's being proven. It's being proved.
I guess that also kind of goes with that old saying of like, it's never too late to start with great skincare, right?
It's never too late. I mean, there's a lot that you can do with topical applications now. And now that things have been specifically formulated for the facial area for aesthetic benefit, you know, we're seeing a lot of products being tested for the market soon. So oftentimes I may have the opportunity to visit labs where they're doing clinical testing for products to improve fine lines, dryness, hydration, and whatnot, all of those aspects that we're trying to fight. And oftentimes those products might be 5 to 10 years from ever seeing the market. So it's very interesting to see, you know, people's concepts come to life and actually see, you know, the commercial audience benefit from it.
Oh, I can't wait. Do you know when your ETA is for your product line?
The official launch will be 2026, but we're going to be putting products out, testing them in different environments all year this year. So, but I still have my line of serums that are available that are definitely amazing peptide de-aging products. So that's still available. And as you know, we're starting to get a lot more exposure based on our work with neurocosmetics, you know, a lot of the other, you know, marketing benefits have kicked in as well.
So exciting. So why don't you share like what your brand is like for your serums? And I'm assuming people can buy it from your website.
Yes. The best place to find our products is on Instagram. So I love talking about my serums because they are, you know, de-aging serums, and there's four highly inspiring formulations, one from Canadian Wildcraft. So people are loving Canadian products right now. So the Longevity Serum is an amazing formulation from ginseng root extract, maple sugar extract, and we have a program, it's the 28-day program, that you're going to see at least a 10 to 20% improvement in fine lines, dryness, texture, and tone of your skin. So we love that. And also in that same family of streamlined products, we have an orchid-based serum, which is made from orchid extracts from upcycled orchids from all around the world. And so orchids, as you know, are amazing for anti-aging. They improve any UV damage that may have been caused in your skin. So if you're concerned with exposure to the sun, or if you've had exposure to the sun, the orchid serum is perfect for that. And then we have one that has mushroom origin. So it's an adaptogen serum, which I love. And then we have another one, which is still considered sort of our luxe serum, and it's not available all the time because it contains 24 karat gold in it, but that is our Lumine serum, which the origins are marine-based ingredients. So ingredients from seaweed, kelp, and bladder wrack, and fermented products. So that one I also love when we can get our hands on it. So yeah, that's the current serum story.
Okay. So that's great. And also now I feel like I need to have one of your serums.
What's really exciting is that, you know, we have the family of four serums available right now. And then we'll be launching our own more neuro beauty based serum very, very soon.
My wrap-up question is, are you going to send me a serum? Just kidding.
Of course I am. Send me your address.
I'm all for supporting. I would happily like buy it. So, Melanie, it's so good to see you again. I love what you're doing. I'm so excited for you. Neurocosmetics just sounds amazing, and I can't wait to dabble into some of your product when you launch it. So thank you again for spending your time with me.
Thank you, Andrea. I've always loved hanging out with you. You're one of my all-time favorite makeup artists for the past 35 years that we've been in this industry.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fuck You 50s. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate the podcast. And we'd love to connect with you on Instagram, so be sure to follow us at the Fuck You 50s. The Fuck You 50s is hosted by Andrea Clare and edited and produced by Bespoke Productions Hub. See you next time.